Jocks.
Stars and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Welcome to Stocks and Jocks.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen, Jim Waller, and aboard for a bit until Matt Byrne gets here. Then he's wandering into his normal guest spot on a Monday. S&P Futures up 24. Nasdaq Futures up 131. Looks like we're going to be, I think, probably up all week. We will see. Money in the system. What could be happier? I mean, we got gold up, we got oil up, we got what do we have down? We don't really have much down here this morning. Looking at my screen, I see this
a lot of green.
Just saying. So hopefully you're long, Jimmy. You got your long gold. Where are you? Oh, he's letting Matt in. There you go. Yeah, it looks like we're going to be we're up on. We were down a few days last week, but now we were up just as a way of review, see where we were on Friday. Friday we're up 59 in the S&P, came back from Thursday's loss. Same thing with the NASDAQ, up 301. So it was kind of a Fibonacci replacement. Now I have to say we're probably above where we were Wednesday night. We'll see if this lasts. But definitely it's, people are looking to have, stuff go from here to the end of the year. Santa Claus rally. We'll see if we get that. On the show today, we should have Mr. John Flanagan. And Nancy will be on later. Nancy's your big bear fan, so she's got to be happy. Jimmy's big bear fan. I ran into a guy wait till he gets on the mic here before I give him a bunch of grief. I was at the Myers yesterday morning. So get a load of this, James. At Myers, you get all these points if you buy stuff there, and every once in a while I cash them in. And one of the cash in things is a buck off your gasoline, right? So I get this maybe every 6-7 weeks because I buy stuff for the office there and everything, and it's a buck off the gas. So their gas was only $2.54 anyway. So there I was pumping gas yesterday morning.
So it was under $2.
It was $1.54. It was like God. It was like I was 30
years old.
President
was right.
Yeah. I only regretted that I didn't drive around more or something because I only took 22 of a possible 26 gallons. I left 4 on the table. What do you think of that?
I don't know, Chief. But continue on with this Bears fan. I think you need to get on. We're a winning team. You got to get on with the team.
This guy reminded me of something you would do, you and your buddies Kendall and the rest of the guys. I walk in the store, and there's this guy. He's got this the most obnoxious hat. It's a bear hat, but instead of, it's not the knit cap, which is that's okay. It's like everybody else's. But what do you call the ear warmer where there's no top to it? I got a couple of those where you just put them.
The headband. Or muffs, ear muffs.
It's kind of a thick headband, and the top of it, instead of being open, is like this orange, weird-looking thing that protrudes like 6 inches into the air. It's almost like an elf hat of some kind. And it's this burnt orange, bear orange. And I'm thinking, if this guy was in front of me at the stadium, it would have to be justifiable homicide to kill a guy. I'm sitting there going, I almost asked him, was that a gift or was it on sale or something? What is? But I didn't. I just looked at it in amazement, and there I was. So,
well, hey, we pulled it off. We got an onside kick. Speaking of your buddy Kendall, I saw him at a party, a Christmas party at my friend's. And, we were watching the game. Everybody was watching the game, even the girls. So it was exciting. I got to admit, that was the guy that caught 2 touchdowns was the one who muffed it.
Yeah. Well, here's what I... Supposedly, interesting things went on this weekend. The NFL supposedly is trying to protect high-valued players. That shot on the Packer quarterback was about as premeditated a knockout as I've seen in 30 years.
I disagree.
I know you will because you're a bear fan.
I mean, Jordan Love did knock his... I mean, the shot was high, yes, but Jordan Love did lower his helmet.
It was absolutely crown of helmet to face mask.
Oh, it was because he lowered his helmet. I mean,
well, whatever. It's not supposed to happen.
It still would have been a high hit. But, you know, what was it?
You're not supposed to lead with your helmet.
Was it a vicious?
Yes.
Okay. I already know where you stand, but
I'm just saying, if the NFL, do you want that happening? Do you want some dumb lineman knocking out the zillion-dollar quarterback?
Well, my understanding is if the quarterback lowers his head, he now somewhat becomes a runner, and that's...
If you're a fan, you will find any way on earth to say that your guy didn't cheat.
Well, that one I would agree with was roughing. The other one, that he hit him high, but he got him in the shoulder, that they threw the penalty, that was not a roughing the passer.
I'm talking about the one that knocked him out, where he nailed him right in the face, man.
I'm talking the one before that.
Oh, so there were two?
There were two.
Now, if
so, obviously you did not watch the game.
I did. I'm curious as to why, if we're going to do that, if we're going to actually concern ourselves with this. Now, in the 50s and 60s, they didn't, you know, so either do it or you don't. I mean, it could be, you know, you want it to be a gladiator fight, let it be that way. But if you don't, and somebody does that, that guy, the opposing quarterback and the opposing coach should be out for 2 weeks without pay. If you want to stop it, that's what you do. But obviously they don't want to stop it. Just saying.
Well, it's a fine line. I mean...
Do you want to protect the $30 million player, don't you? I mean,
well, okay, but what happens when he becomes a runner?
Then you tackle
him. Still
him.
Protect him?
No, but I'm saying the helmet to helmet, one of the biggest flaws in football is as soon as you put the face mask on people, the helmet became a weapon. And it's killed a couple guys in college and stuff. And look at what happened to Darryl. I mean, is that what you want to have happen? The guy went straight in. And if you I watched the replay and I'm going, what the hell was that? The guy went in and nailed him right on the nose.
He did, but, you know, Jordan Love did.
All right, so he would have lower
his head.
All right, he would have got him in the chin otherwise.
He might have got him in the chin. It was a roughing. I'm not disputing it wasn't a roughing, but I think that when he lowered his helmet, it made the hit that much more.
I'm saying if you want to stop people using the helmet as a weapon. You can't tell me that the guy didn't use the helmet as a weapon in that play.
Okay. Well, I thought the concussion more came from when he hit his head hit the ground pretty hard.
Well, too. Yeah. Well, the re-hit didn't help.
No, the re-hit did not help. But hey.
By the way, did you call up this year? I mean, for years it seems like no matter what happens, the pass interference play call is always on the defense.
Pretty much.
Now, this for whatever reason, I must have watched bits and pieces of five games this weekend. There had to be 30 offensive pass interference calls. Did the commissioner call the refs and say, what are you doing? Every game had offensive pass interference in it, like a couple times.
Probably. I mean...
Well, the Steelers.
Detroit. Chief, come on. I mean, there's always a penalty on every play.
I'm saying they never call offensive pass interference. And all
no,
of a sudden,
they rarely call it. I've only seen it called twice this year.
I probably saw it called 10 times yesterday.
But
Detroit game, it was called, what, the last three plays?
Okay.
Dallas, it was called. It's unreal. Not saying they shouldn't. You know what's also never called? Is if a guy...
Holding.
Well, if a guy puts a stiff arm out and grabs the other guy's face mask.
Walter Payton used to do that all the time.
He wasn't a grabber.
No, but he did. I mean, the rules are that if you touch the mask, it's a face mask now.
But I've seen people just absolutely grab it while they're doing it. I'm going, wow.
True. I don't know what you're going to say. I don't know about, like, holding. There were a couple of times, I mean, these guys got mugged.
Well, it seems like if you don't turn the guy, they don't really call it.
But I could grab his shirt and drag him down.
Inside, you can grab. I don't know. It's goofy, but it's only if you see the dude being like yanked around. If somebody's trying to go by him, and all of a sudden the body moves one side to the other. That's why most of the holding penalties you see, if somebody is blocking a guy, and all of a sudden he sees his guy running, and the defender goes to get him, he grabs on.
Although I did see one in the Buffalo game, and it's not called that often, is tripping.
Yeah.
It was a clear case of tripping. He He got this. He was going down, and he put his leg up, and he tripped the guy.
Buffalo won, right?
Buffalo did win.
Does it look to you like some of these teams are really limping into it? You almost can't go by the name of the team anymore. You look at the list of injuries. The Bears, you know, they're an exciting team. They come out, they play the second half hard, but they have been about as they've had some guys on defense go down, but they're the only team in the league that hasn't had knock on wood, that hasn't had an offensive lineman go down. Some of these teams are down 3 and 4 offensive linemen.
That is true.
Refresh my memory. Last year, in the playoffs, it was the Eagles versus who? Was it Detroit in the championship
yes,
game?
Yes, it was Detroit.
Right, Detroit's out. The Eagles are probably in, but nowhere near the same team.
No, it seems that their tush-push, people have figured out how to block it. I watched that game, and they had 3 or 4 times that they could not get it. Now, what they are calling now on the tush-push is, and they called it on the Eagles, is if someone moves his hand first, so they're looking for that motion very quickly now.
Well, I think when you lose Kelce as your center, the tush push doesn't do as well.
Well, like anything, like when the Bears had the 46 defense, eventually people figure out how to defend against it. When the tush push is the same thing. You're right. I don't know. I mean, it looks like, you know, Buffalo looks real strong. They haven't had a lot of problems, you know.
Well, they had huge offensive line issues. I think a couple of guys are coming back.
They do. But Josh Allen has done it, kept the team. I don't know about Tampa Bay. Baker Mayfield did not look good.
They won, though, right?
No, they did not.
Oh.
They lost.
The team I don't think anybody wants to play is Texas.
Texas is playing well right now. Up and down. Washington is, they're hurt. Dallas is Dallas. You know.
They have no defense at all.
Well, they have no, and that's why Eberflus, our former coach, will be fired shortly thereafter.
They haven't had a defense in 4 years. They got no people.
Doesn't matter.
Over there. I know, you got to fire everybody, so.
It doesn't matter.
What they say, who are the X's and who are the O's?
I mean, you got, you know, that is correct. Who are the X's?
Well, look at Baltimore. All of a sudden, you lose Roquan Smith and a couple guys on D. They're not the same team.
No, they're not. And now Lamar Jackson, it looks like he's
anyway, last year was Buffalo KC. So KC's out.
KC is out.
Buffalo's still in. And on the other side, it was the Eagles and Detroit, right?
Correct. And Detroit's pretty much out.
Yeah, well, I think they're totally out. I think they're going to be totally out.
So now we're looking at, you know, San Francisco, who plays tonight. They should win. Then they play the Bears. And then the Bears have Detroit at home.
Lose 2 and the Pack win 2, the Pack can still get ahead of them because they got that wacky tie with Dallas, right?
They do.
Well, the AFC, it looks like... Pittsburgh's in. They're not for sure in. If they lose next week, they play to Baltimore the last game. Do you like this new style where you play the two games like a team 2 weeks apart, 3 weeks apart?
No, I don't. I don't think it's helpful. I think that's a scheduling snafu.
Well, it's somebody's plan because the Bears did it with Green Bay.
Well, yeah, but this is the first time in like 20, 30 years that this has ever happened before. I mean, usually
somebody decided to do it for whatever reason.
I guess. But then again, I mean, you had Detroit and the Bears play early in the season, and then now they're playing the last game of the season.
Yeah, I know. It's a. You wonder, there is, I guess, some justification if you talk about if one team's injured or the other team's injured playing 2 weeks. I don't know. I don't really think there's any justification to it, but there has to be some logic to it because it's happening to a few teams. Didn't Pittsburgh just play the Ravens too?
Yeah, they played the Ravens, I think, 2 weeks ago, yeah.
And they're playing them again in the last game. Well, whatever. It's sort of interesting. But the college, I certainly don't want to get in the habit of gambling on this stuff, right? So... my nephew, who just happens to live over on the east side, and he goes by the, he goes across the border to buy his gas at Walmart or something, I don't know. But so I go, you know, I cannot believe that this James Madison Oregon spread is only 21 points. I figure they're going to lose by 40. And I tell him this, and he goes, well, here, give me some dough. I'm right next to the casino. I'm going to put the bet down. Because I refuse to have an online betting thing. And I haven't made a bet since I was in Vegas how many years ago. I don't mind that. You walk up with your dough, you give the guy the dough, and if you win, you win. I said, nah, I don't want to. That's the last thing I need. And I thought that was the absolute sucker bet of the year. And I think Oregon was up, what, 30-3 or something right out of the gate?
Yes.
And Madison ends up covering. You've got to be kidding me.
I mean, 20 points is, but then you look at Tulane, they got blown out.
And they're better. I mean, so James Madison ended up making a big comeback in the damn thing. They ended up losing, what the hell did they lose by? They lost by 17. They ended up scoring a bunch of points in the second half, 51-34. You think Oregon Nation is happy? But they didn't cover? They got to be.
I don't know, but that, I mean, 20 some odd points is a lot. I mean, that's.
Well, 21, I mean, it was a huge mismatch.
It was, and it looked like it was, but I mean, Oregon still won.
Well, I mean,
they won by 17.
I know, but if you don't cover, your fans are not happy. Join the new world, buddy. It's not whether you win or lose, it's whether you cover.
Okay. Well, we're moving forward. I do think that this method of giving certain conferences a thing is kind of a snafu, because clearly Tulane and James Madison should not have been in the top 10, not in the top 12.
Well, no doubt. And, you know, the Irish have a point. And
and they're being spoiled about it and saying, you know, we're not going to play anybody now.
Why would you play any bowl?
Money. And it's also for the guys.
How much money do you think you?
It's also for the guys that are seniors. You get another look at from the pro scouts.
The guys that are seniors don't play if they're going to be in the draft.
They used to.
They don't anymore. They haven't for like 4 or 5 years. If you're draftable, you don't play the bowl. All you do is get hurt.
Well, if you're a guy on the bubble, not on the draft chart, I think you would want to play.
What do you think? That's what happened to Roquan Smith. Oh, he got a cheap shot in an Ohio State game in a bowl that meant nothing. And he had to sell his first year, and he had that horrendous knee surgery. Nobody knew if they could even fix him. What are you going about the fifth round? He was a number one. He was a top 10 pick before that.
Well, that happens.
Yeah, I'm going to, you know, one of these, Kevin will probably be able to tell us one of these days. Yeah, Kevin's right. The Bears have had three offensive linemen hurt, but they haven't had anybody torn up like these other people and not come back. I'm going to say that virtually none of these bowls are cash positive for some of these teams. Unless you travel well, we'll do a deep dive on this, but the story is, if you go to a bowl, you, the school, are required to sell a certain amount of tickets. Now, if you got alumni that's fired up and travels, I would say that if the Irish were going to play Texas in a bowl, both the Irish and Texas could probably unload those tickets. But it's getting harder and harder to do it. And if you can't unload them, the school has to buy them. So the school gets some money for getting the team down there. I don't think you get money for the band. I'm going to say, you know, for the extra 2 weeks of practice, the coaches are all for it because they get 2 weeks of practice, and that's all coaches want to do. But I'm not. These other bowls, I'm going to say, you got to strategically place the camera so it doesn't look like the stands are empty because the stands are empty. I think they're an absolute waste of time, Jimmy. That's just one man's opinion. And I don't think anybody makes any money on it except maybe ESPN because they got something on TV. And maybe people gamble on them. They must. Why else would you watch these things? Other than you have nothing else on.
That nothing else on is usually a pretty good reason.
Well, yeah. But they're worth nothing now. I mean, it's not like New Year's Day. That was the bowl playoff for a long time, right?
Still is.
Well, I'm talking about you know, if the Big Ten team was number one or two and they're playing, you know, the Pac-10 and they're one or two and then somebody else in the Sugar Bowl, as people lost during the day went on, that's how you figured out. It was almost like a playoff, really, some
sure.
years. But, you know, we got
Sugar, Cotton, you know, Orange Bowl, those are the Sugar, the Cotton, the Orange Bowl, the Rose Bowl, those were the big ones.
Yep.
Those are the New Year's Day games. They're the only games on.
Well, yeah, you know, I don't, anyway, we'll see what happens. But the teams that are left, these are all New Year's, well, actually not all New Year's Day. But it's Oregon, Texas Tech. That's the fifth and the fourth seed. They're January, that's the first game, January 1st. Second game is Alabama, Indiana. And that one, then the third game is Ole Miss and Georgia. Ole Miss looks pretty good, don't they?
Yeah, but Georgia has beaten them already this year.
Well, maybe it's... Georgia is 6.5-point favorites. And then the Miami plays Ohio State on the New Year's Eve tonight on ESPN. Ohio State is 9.5-point favorites. Wow. Georgia is 6.5-point favorites. Indiana is a 7-point favorite in Alabama. And Oregon's a favorite against Texas Tech. Would you believe that?
Oregon was number three in the nation.
Well, yeah. They're ranked fifth. They had to play the first round. Texas Tech got the bye.
Okay.
Because Texas Tech, they won what division? Didn't they win a... What conference did they win? They won the Big 12 or something.
Yeah, or the WAC.
Yeah, something. Not a big. I think it was the Big 12. Anyway, kind of enough of that. We can have Mr. Flanagan call in a minute. The news of the day is, actually, there's not that much news. But I guess we snagged another tanker in the process of it. Gold and silvers are making highs. Did you see the Epstein thing, and everybody's all pissed off because they didn't put everything out there. So after it was out, they took some of the pictures back. I don't know if you saw this or not.
Yes, and then they had to put them back out.
Well, but they redacted some of it because they threw out a picture of an open drawer with a picture of Epstein with Clinton in the drawer.
And Trump, I believe, too.
Well,
right?
You're not supposed to see that. That was another picture on the side.
Yeah.
That if you blew it up, showed Trump with these two young girls in bikinis, like hanging at him. So they, all of a sudden they redacted that picture with the idea that they wanted to protect the two girls. Really? Yeah. They give a crap about the two girls? I mean, give me a break. So then the thing came back on with what is it, blacked out or something? But because they had these things all labeled and everything. Pretty strange stuff. I really wish, instead of, our friend Wayne has been, I don't know if you've been listening to this Thursday show's map, but Wayne's actually writing a book on this whole thing. And it's I'm sure there's going to be some, you know, somebody messing around with a 14-year-old in there, but because that's obviously what happened. But it's all about who the players really were back from the time of Maxwell's father and how many... Secrets. What do you call them, Jimmy? Secret Service or Secret Police? Or what do you call them, Assad and all these other guys?
Yeah, they're the spy organizations.
All the spy organizations essentially having access to some of this stuff that Epstein pulled on U.S. soil. And the CIA being either complicit or ignorant of the whole mess going on. And this, we're talking about a 30-year deal. And, you know, it's funny when you listen to people, I think, that kind of know what they're talking about. Not that, who's the young lady that's the real conspiracy theorist, Jimmy? She's all over YouTube.
Oh, Laura Loomer.
Yeah. No. No, do you not know Laura Loomer?
Marjorie Taylor Greene?
No, it's she's out of the country now. She thinks they're after her or something. She's a... Anyway, I forget her name. But
Whitney Webb? Was that
Jan, you got it. Whitney Webb, right?
Whitney Webb, yeah.
And she was, Jan and I were talking about yesterday, she says a lot of this stuff stems from World War II, which is essentially where Maxwell's father came from. And the governments, and you know, in crazed attempts to win the war, which, no kidding, made all these alliances with a lot of the underworld and mafia organizations and everything, and how it's still sort of going on. I mean, that's what Wayne's writing about, is it's all about these guys that are here compromising not only U.S. citizens, but Arabs and everybody else. I mean, all that information was getting out. These guys are so dumb, they don't even know they're being compromised. That, do you believe, John and Jimmy and Matt, the amount of people that made phone calls and text messages while riding between the two islands?
Mm.
I mean, how dumb can you be? I mean,
that's hubris, Tom.
Well, it's like, you know, my buddy Bill represented these three guys a couple of years ago that stole all these arms. Not arms, but guns. Somehow they found out there were guns in a boxcar being shipped. So they get on, they get down in the South Loop or something, not South Loop, but somewhere in a rail yard. And they go in there and they steal these guns. Well, the idiots are sending text messages from the crime scene. They end up getting triangulated because nobody else is in the middle of the rail yard. So they find, okay, who are these three idiots taking text messages from the crime scene? Well, it turns out it was the guys who robbed the guns. Duh. I mean, it's a good thing a lot of people that steal stuff are pretty dumb, isn't it? Yeah,
yep.
You're right. It is some kind of hubris, but you think, God, if you're going to a whorehouse, leave your phone at home. I mean, anyway.
At least turn it on, you know.
At least turn it off or do something, or pull a battery out or whatever you're doing.
Airplane mode, maybe, yeah.
What exactly is airplane mode?
Basically, it stops all signals. Well, supposedly it's supposed to stop all signals coming and going from your phone.
So why would you do that? So you just turn it off?
Because it can interfere with the flight when on takeoffs and landings.
I'm saying, why wouldn't you just turn the phone off?
Well, you don't have to reboot it, you know, if it's on airplane mode. So it's just, I think it's say starting the phone up again if it's in airplane mode, as opposed to turning it off and waiting for it to, you know, hula its way through. So,
well, if it's on airplane mode, if you get a text, do you know you got it?
No.
So it's sort of like turning it off.
Same thing with Do Not Disturb, too.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not sure the difference between those in iPhones or Android, but you get no notifications, no nothing. So.
What good is it?
Well, it's just if you're like at a concert or you know, you're someplace where you're in a meeting and you don't want to be, you know, the idiot in the room, so turn one of those on. So.
It's always cool when the cell phone goes off in the middle of like a lecture or something.
That happened to me in class one time after yelling and screaming all the time about students whose phones went off. My phone went off. I was completely abashed.
Did everybody laugh at you?
Yeah, and rightfully so.
God. You know, we kind of wanted to talk a little bit. I believe it or not, Stocks and Jacks sometimes can hit stuff right on the nose. And I was listening Saturday as I'm driving through all this traffic to get to Orland. But I went to Costco yesterday, and I'm surprised I survived. The place is mobbed. The people with the shopping carts, it's more dangerous than driving on the Ryan.
They're a rough crowd.
I'm dodging cart after. Good thing I'm still light on my feet, not so much. But
they need turn signals on those things.
Yeah, no kidding. But I tell you what, they got you out of there in a second. They got guys.
Yeah, they are pros.
Yeah. So I said to the guy, he says, here, I'll pre-check you out. Just give your credit, your whatever, your membership card to the lady and don't have to check you out. So he checks me out and I go, well, I looked all over to see what you guys are giving away. He goes, I did too. For 3 days it's been like this. The place is mine, the guy says to me. But, I mean, it's whatever. But on the way over there, I'm listening to News Radio 78, and they started talking about this big survey about Trump's first economic year and how, I'm not blaming him because it's been like this for a long time. Of course, he was there for 4 years, but the other guys are just as bad. And they talked about inflation. And, of course, now, you know, the price of gas is down some and the price of eggs is down. That's all you hear from these guys, right? But what did we talk about last week, John, and all week? I mean, didn't that's not when you were on. And I was saying that if you wanted to fix the CPI, the two places you'd have to go are medical and housing, because those are the ones that are flat-ass, outright lies, right? In a big way. I mean, nobody really cares if you screw up the price of rice, literally, right? I mean, what good is it? You know, it's like, you know, 0.00 something of your basket. So sure enough, all these interviews, they said the biggest concerns are the inflation, and nobody can handle the medical stuff, and nobody can handle house prices. So the population has somehow zeroed in on the numbers like we've been talking about for several years. I mean, it takes a while, right? But there's no one that those two are the problem, and Trump and anybody else can talk all he wants about eggs, and nobody's buying it because that's not what the issue is. And we've been spot on that, haven't we?
Yeah, well, if you can't get your toe in the real estate market, that's traditionally the only way you can really build wealth, you know, the average person, unless you've got family money or, you know, you can, you know, parcel out in other investments. But most people don't have, you know, enough skill or, you know, patience to do that. Buying a house was always the way to kind of get the ball started. And, man, I wouldn't want to be, you know, a young person today or, you know, a young partner in a couple trying to get started and then raise a family, because, you know, having a home really isn't part of the formula anymore. It's just out of sight.
What did we say last week when Audrey was in? I heard some other survey that you needed, $125,000 now to buy a median home?
Yeah.
And how many people make $125,000? 15%? 10?
Yeah.
Now, if you,
and declining, too.
Yeah, and declining.
Yeah.
You know, pretty scary stuff. But one thing I wanted to kind of tee up here a little bit, and Jimmy, I'd love your opinions on this, is people, you know, we're talking about the healthcare stuff. And we have, you know, despite whatever party you're in, simple fact is the healthcare is running rampant on just about everybody, to the point where some people are opting out and not even going to a doctor. Nancy, I think, has a story when she comes on. I'll let her tell it about somebody who has had some horrible experience with breast cancer. And I know Karen Reeves, who came on the show a couple times, yeah, you got to try and get her back on. She was a terrific guest. Which was her mother-in-law during COVID. She couldn't get in to see anybody. And then as soon as she got in, she knew she had a lump on her breast. Went in and, oh, man, you got like stage 3 or 4 or something. So I think they threw a whole bunch of treatment at her. God knows how much it cost. And she was dead in 6 months, wasn't she, Jen? Or Matt? You were. I mean, and you wonder how much of this is going on where people can't get in to see somebody and they get in and all of a sudden they run up this huge bill and they're dead anyway. I remember, you know, Biden talking about 10 drugs he wanted to get the price down on. I remember his speech. It was about two and a half years into his term. He named all these drugs that some of them, you know, older people use or some they don't. And he wanted Medicare to get negotiated prices, and it went nowhere. Now, Trump comes in, and he starts naming a bunch of drugs and how he's going to lower the price of those. Well, that was 9 months ago, and it's going nowhere. Now, and obviously everybody has this weird feeling that the drug companies are buying everybody. Now, the thing I want to talk about, you know, kind of from the ground up, John and Jimmy, and Matt, please opine in, or anybody else wants to text in. What is the deal here? I mean, when I say that, if boy, this would be unpopular. This would be an absolute fart in church. John, if you and I were co-presidents, what would make Jimmy our chief of staff? Could you imagine Jimmy our chief of staff? What do you think the place would look like? It'd be. If you said jump, they'd say how high, Jimmy? Is that what's going on over there? Anyway, if we dragged 10 of the creeps from each side of the aisle to Camp David, and what if you were, John, I'd make you do this. What if we just said, all right, guys, I went through all your political contributions. It looks like every one of you bleeps has taken an average of X thousand dollars from the drug companies and big hospitals and stuff over your great career here. Exactly how compromised are you? Are you totally bought and paid, or could you vote for a bill to corral some of this? How bad is it? Do you think anybody would tell us? How bad do you think it is? I mean, I guess my question is, how co-opted do you get when somebody gives you money? You're a little co-opted, right? I mean, how little, I don't know, but a little bit. How co-opted do you get? I mean, to the point where if I came through, or you came through, or Jimmy came through with the world's best bill, you couldn't vote for it because these guys paid you? I mean, how far down the road do you think they are?
Way down.
I think go ahead, Jim.
Way down. I mean, I took a look at, Mrs. Adelson, who has already pledged $250 million towards Trump's campaign for 2028. And all she wants is the West Bank.
Yeah.
I mean, she made it just, I mean, it's way down. She is, I would say, in the old days, it got you a favor, got you in to be talked to. But when you get that blatant telling what you want for your money, I think we've gone way past, it's now just bribery.
Well, to tell you a quick story, we used to go to Vegas a lot, right? So the first time we went to a show, somebody says, you gotta goose the maitre d', right, to get a decent seat. So back in those days, the show was like $20 or $18. So the guy comes, and there's two of us standing. I don't think it was me and Jay. It might have been me and Doc. Maybe me and Doc and Jay, like two or three of us. So I give the guy $20. And he puts us in like in the last seat.
He didn't goose him enough.
So I'm sitting there going, this didn't work. So the next show we go to, I give the guy $20, and I kind of held it away from him. I said, we want to sit down there. And the guy goes, okay. So to just wing money at somebody is pretty dumb, isn't it? Without telling them what you want? What's the point? I'm just taking it from the other side. I'm not saying you're wrong.
No, I think so. I just think it's just more...
Well, to tell us what they're giving it to for, it was really blatant, yeah.
More blatant now. I mean, there was just no question that, you know, payola has been always a part of it. If I give enough to campaign, I get preferential treatment. And, you know, if there's something that's going to, as in, if there's a bill that's going to affect my business, I'm going to get a call from the president and ask me what I think. I'm just not going to be, well, this is what I want for my money.
Let's start from the other end, because on this end we can talk in that. Let's start from the other end. Maybe it'll be simpler. Let's say a guy like Matt Byrne runs a party for whoever. Kendall's running for office, right? So Matt Byrne's going to have a party. You know, what'd the guy say about the one guy in Animal House? He's a sneaky little...
Sounds like me, yeah.
That'll be Matt Byrne. So
that's Niedermeyer.
Niedermeyer. Yeah, he's a sneaky little shit. Yeah. So Matt has his party, and he goes out and buys some booze, and all of a sudden we go over there and we meet the young Bill Clinton or somebody, whoever the hell it is, the young Republican, doesn't matter. And we pony up $1,000, and there's 15 of us. So we give the checks to Matt, and we show up and we shake hands and have a glass of wine or whatever with whoever's running. And, we go on our merry way. Now, Matt's got 15, he ponies up, so he's a bundler, right? Isn't that what they call those guys?
Yes.
So Matt gives whoever, Joe Jamoke, $15,000. Now, it's early on in a campaign, so nobody else is giving him money, so it should mean a little more. If he starts to catch wind, then it becomes $2,000 a pop, right, Jen? Then it gets more and more expensive. My question is, what exactly do we get at what level? And you can ratchet this up to a drug company somehow finding a way to everybody at the drug company sends the max, plus the drug company sends money to the PAC and all this other kind of crap, to where it could be, $1 million. What do you get at each level? I guess, I mean, what do we get for pointing up the $1,000 other than a glass of wine? Nothing?
Yeah, unless you have some name recognition or you're part of some important industry and your vote, your contribution carries weight behind it, even if it's not a lot of money, but you've got kind of connections that indicate you're somebody that you want to please. I think it's very, everybody, by taking these contributions makes themselves vulnerable at some level, either for the one crucial vote that the donor needs you on their side when it comes up, if it comes up, and other stuff along the way where they may or may not pull in favor. It isn't like you are completely controlled necessarily, but you don't have to be if you're there for, when the rubber hits the road and your vote is really needed. And, this extends now way beyond...
But what does Matt get for ponying up to $15,000?
Yeah, what do I get?
Does he get like a phone number of a staffer or something?
Probably. And, you know, and just, you know, the ability to contact somebody or a group of people to feel like your voice is being heard. And, you know, that this is not just taking your money and walking away. But that doesn't mean that you know, you're going to get everything you want when you want it, unless the contribution is big enough. And I think now the problem, Tom, is that it's not just, you know, donors in pharmaceutical industry, let's say, or, you know, the union, you know, teachers unions or something else, but it's foreign governments, you know, it's international espionage.
Well, that's allegedly against the law, correct? To take a political contribution from a foreign source. That's what, when Hillary had the international foundation, that's why that thing was such a piece of crap. All she was doing was get political contributions, right?
Right, right. But the Clinton Foundation and the State Department, I mean, they're in bed with each other. But, I mean, look at all the, you see any reference in the press to, you know, George Soros influenced state's attorneys like Kim Fox and, you know, a bunch of people. This is just open, it's not even a secret of any kind. That this is money that's been funneled.
How does that money get to Kim Fox? I mean, George Soros, is he an American citizen?
Yes.
Okay, well, I asked. I don't know. Was he living in London? I thought he lived in London. Or he's living in New York. I don't know. I don't know. Other than hearing
his
name.
He is an American citizen. I don't know where. I know he has residences around the world. But
what can a citizen, if I wanted to give money to Kim Fox, I thought I could only give her like $1,000 or something.
No.
Well, you could do that, but you know, you don't have much leverage for $1,000.
I'm saying, but what I thought there was a limit.
No, I don't think there is on an individual. I think corporations do, but not an individual. That's why Adelson could give $250 million.
Yeah, since the Citizens United case, you know, it's free speech. So,
well, I remember when the CBOE when I was on the, this is the '90s. So I'm going to ask you guys what the changes have been. The CBOE, whenever there was a visiting. You know, dignitary, being a senator or a high-end rep or something, we'd have a lady, the CBOE had a lady who was really good at that, and she would invite people over to a breakfast, and we'd sit down, and they'd have a little bit of a speech, and then people get to ask questions, and I thought it was pretty spectacular and how democracy works, because the guys would sit there, they'd learn about your business, you'd tell them what you did, what your concerns were, and they would tell you what they're working on, and then they would ask questions, and I think he gave him coffee, a couple of cookies, and I think the limit was $500 or something. So it's pretty hard to think you're buying a guy for $500. We had Tom Foley, we had Rostenkowski a couple of times. Tom Foley was pretty impressive, and so was Rosty. And then there was Phil Graham. He was kind of a character, but we had all these different guys. But I thought really that was kind of how democracy works. I don't think you could possibly say you were buying one of those dudes for $500. But now if it was $100,000, that's kind of a different story, don't you think? But a corporation can't do that, right? Individuals can?
Yeah.
So
take somebody like Eric Swalwell as an example, the congressman from California who was embarrassed in the Fang Fang
espionage. I remember the name, yeah.
But, when he is submitted his, you know, disclosures, every time he runs, he has to do it every year. He has no bank account, at least the last ones I've read about. He has no residence in, you know, the place that he represents, in Livermore, California, and he and his wife just bought a $1 million townhouse in Washington, D.C., and he's in trouble running for governor of California because he doesn't have a residence in the state of California at all. But he has never paid down his student loans from law school. You know, he hasn't touched them since like 2005 or 2006. Never paid anything on them. So how does this guy live? I mean, who's taking care of him? He has no, you know, cash flow. He has, you know, he's apparently that I know. And for a long time he had no mortgage. He had no, you know, rent payment. His financial disclosures were a complete cipher. So some organization, some government, whatever, is clearly taking care of this guy and completely erased.
How do you, in this day when everybody knows, everybody buys a cup of coffee, how do people not know that?
Well, that takes a certain kind of expertise that you and I could never avail ourselves of, because I couldn't secrete, you know, my financial activity and stay abreast of the law.
I just got a text, I think, from is either Dan Corleone or Kevin O'Neill. I don't know who. Someday, and that day may never come, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Yes.
Yeah.
You'd be better answer the phone.
I really would like to understand, what do you get for what? I mean, is every single one of these guys, no matter who's president, if Solomon was president, we can never do anything about this medical area that's choking the hell out of the country? I mean, somehow, some way, and what I'm trying to lead in, boy, talk about trying to connect them together. Look how desperate the city of Chicago is. I'm going to go through two quick stories here, and then you guys can comment. Look how desperate the city of Chicago is, and finally, the alderman raised up against the mayor and said, we're not doing a friggin' head tax. And I don't know if I ever mentioned, Jimmy, you probably never heard this, but Eisenhower's two daughters married, or Nixon's two daughters, one of them married Eisenhower's son, right?
David Eisenhower, yeah.
And the other one married...
Edward Cox.
Yeah, some guy who's in a think tank somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I read the thing in his think tank, and people asked him, this is a long time ago, he said, what is wrong with American politics? Why is it like it is, and why and the economy's all screwed up, and everybody's grabbing money? He goes, why can't anybody change it? And he said, because we haven't hit bottom yet. Now, I don't know where the hell he thinks bottom is, but he said, we haven't hit... Now, the city, I think, has finally hit bottom, and he told the mayor, absolutely not. And I think that budget thing is going to pass. But how does it work that allegedly the city is owed like $1.5 billion or something that they don't collect? I don't see how that works either, but how do you just send out... Seems like a lot of people don't pay their water bill. I mean, the mayor didn't pay it, right, until he started to run for office?
The president of the teachers' union. She's got an even bigger one.
Somehow or another, I remember, you know, it's been a long time ago, my statute of limitations up. I didn't have a city sticker for like 15 years until finally the state matched up with the city and I get this letter saying, hey, yo, it's a city sticker. Okay, then. How do they not do that anymore? How do they not know your address if you've got a state license plate that you don't have a city sticker? I mean, that's got to be the easiest computing thing on earth. How do you not pay your water bill? I mean, I don't get it.
Well, you know, if you listen to the Justice Democrats and Brandon Johnson and Jasmine Crockett, the whole slew of people, they think clean water is a human right. They don't think about, well, you need a filtration plant, you need sewer maintenance to carry the used water away, and somebody's got to be testing it and make sure it's safe to drink. You could just tell everybody, go to Lake Michigan and bring your pail and take the bus and bring it home. But, you're going to have a lot of sick people if that's the way they get the drinking water. But when you think it's a human right and that, the city says, we're not going to shut off your water service if you don't pay, well, this is just a green light. Why should anybody pay? And this is the boat we're in.
But doesn't it become a lien in a house?
They don't enforce it.
They don't, and this is what, Johnson has gotten entangled in this budget mess where he's saying he doesn't want to go after the working people of Chicago, which is his code language for, non-whites, for, bills that are owed to the city because they don't have any money. And, somebody asked him, press conference the other day, could you not pay your water bill when you didn't pay it? Of course, he didn't answer that question.
But did he and Trump read the same book? His code words for non-white, and Trump's have code words for only white.
Well, Johnson's are, they're more blatant.
I don't know if they're more blatant, but they're both pretty. But here, explain to me this, you guys, because Jimmy's all over this because he used to do the work for a firm that did mortgages and stuff. What's the fine line between somebody not buying a vehicle sticker, when everybody else does, well, most people do, not paying your water bill, and raising somebody's taxes from $8,000 to $15,000 and send them a bill when you know he can't pay? I mean, somehow or other, Audrey was selling a couple of houses in Chicago Heights. Yeah, Jimmy, the houses are... $75,000 and the tax bill is like $8,000. I mean, okay, make it $12,000, make it $50,000. What's the difference? Nobody can pay it. I mean, you can be that stupid and send it out there and then send a collection agency after people if you want. I think that's mean, insanity, whatever you want to do it. But somebody not paying their city sticker, now that where's the line there? I mean, I don't know where the line is.
Neither do I.
When you have real estate taxes that are capriciously raised, and you know, and it's going to fund schools that don't teach anything, that to me is somewhat different from a water bill.
What I'm saying, I'm asking, where's the line?
Yeah, I mean, you're consuming water and you know getting the benefit of it, but you know the way the city handled this, and this has always been a problem when it comes to collection, because the city, you know, could take over a whole you know subsection of the circuit court to just try to get payment on its fees. At the very most, that you know, maybe in some cases they'd get only a lien on the property, which would only yield money when somebody tried to sell the property. You'd have to settle that lien, and that's what the city did in the 70s, 1978, when in order to buy transfer tax stamps for a deed to property in the city of Chicago, the city made a requirement that you get a certification from the water department that the water account was current. Otherwise, they wouldn't sell you the revenue stamp, so it would block the sale. And if you wanted to, you know, sell this house, you had to come up with the money to the water department to get a clean bill of health, and they'd stamp the, you know, statement that your bill was current, and then you could buy the city's revenue stamp. So they put that block on it, and that's still the only real enforcement measure I know of, you know, where you have to bring it current if you want to sell the property. But if you don't, you just want to sit there and, you know, run your water all day long, there's nobody going to stop.
Well, there was a, talk about a weirdo story. Audrey had this, well, I don't think she might have died, but had this friend, somehow or another, she had two lots, essentially in the hood, right? I don't know how she got them, when somebody left them to her, but they might have lived in that neighborhood way back. There was never any building there. There was never a house. And whenever she went to sell the property, this lien popped up that she owed all this money on a water bill from like years ago, and there never was a building there. And she had a couple of slimy attorneys saying, "We'll take care of it." She gave them money, and they never fixed it. So then all of a sudden, somebody must have wanted the property. In the same, you know, this is the truth, so I can say it. African American lady cop must have got on the take from somebody. And there's a law that says you have to cut, even if you have an abandoned piece of property, you have to cut the grass, right? Or there's weeds.
Yep.
Well, so every 2 weeks in the summer, she's getting a ticket from the same cop. Now, there's no way on earth this lady's going to go out and buy a pickup truck, show up with a lawnmower, and mow this grass in the middle of God knows where it was, Austin or someplace. So she's desperately trying to sell this property or to give it up somehow. Finally, she gets like LegalZoom. They take the case, and for like $200 or $300, immediately decide there was never a water bill because there was never a house there. This is after like a decade of fighting this through a couple of attorneys. But they were absolutely adamant that she owed all this money on water bills, even though there was never a building there. And somehow or another, she couldn't sell it without the lien being taken care of. How do these other guys get to do it?
Well, there's a lot of mistakes in the water department. In the way service is installed or, you know, maintained or monitored. And I had a case one time years ago with a friend of mine whose house was being sold in Old Town. It was a condo that had been built in the 70s. And I went to get the water certification from the water department that the bill was paid, you know, in anticipation of closing the deal. And, you know, I kept calling, is the thing ready? Finally, they said, you got to come in and talk to us. So I went into the water department, and they said, we have no record of this condo having any water service at all.
And I said, well, then they were paid up.
Because I've been in the house, and I know it has water service, but it turned out that this condo, with like 10 units that, you know, were, you know, all like the party walls all down one block, you know, they demolished whatever had been there, and then they put in this new development. And the water service had been allocated to each apartment, but the bill had not been allocated to any of them.
Really?
So go figure this. So all these people were in this condo were using water freely, and there was no billing arrangement because nobody was receiving a bill for any of this water. So this postponed the closing, to say the least, and it was thousands and thousands of dollars that were owed. And everybody in the condo association had to like go back to each apartment owner saying, well, when did you buy your apartment? Did you ever question why you weren't getting a water bill from the city? You know, nobody, oh, I didn't know anything about that. Nobody told me at closing I had to pay a water bill. I didn't think I had to pay a water bill. So all these people were completely clueless. So everybody had to kick in money to get the account current, and then they had to put every apartment onto its billing system so that in the future they would each receive a bill. So this is mass, you know, stupidity that they let this happen. But that, you know, a lot of water is diverted. You know, if you got some buddy of yours who can take water off of a, you know, service to one place and get it into your own, and the bill goes nowhere, or it goes to the wrong address, or there's no house there anymore, but there's water.
Any address but mine is the right address.
Yeah. Well, exactly. So you know, the water department has traditionally been, I mean, it's better now, I think, than it was, say, 40 years ago. But it was kind of sloppy, to say the least. And most people had estimated bills, so you know they didn't have a meter. And a lot of people, you know, still had that kind of arrangement, so they could use unlimited water and they pay just a standard rate. Whereas, you know, above a certain number of units, you have to have a meter, and then you pay for what you actually consume, which is a lot fairer. But the city now really has no enforcement measure to make anybody pay their water bill unless they have to someday sell the building, and then, you know, they're going to have to come up with a load of cash to do it. But until then, you know, the city just waits for.
I know this whole thing is
just ridiculous.
In the burbs, I guess I'll tell one more little quick story, and then we'll decide where exactly is rock bottom on this medical stuff when we're talking about billions of dollars a month that the government. Or are we just going to not? We're just going to let everybody die, one or the other. I don't know which, but in the burbs, when all of a sudden a village or a city, I don't know what the difference, how big do you got to be to not be a village anymore? You got to be a city, right? Anyways, if all of a sudden a place that used to have well water decides to get on city water, they usually get one of these companies to do it, right? Somebody will provide the water like the Orland or something at some huge price, correct?
I mean, yes.
But somehow or another, they make people turn off their wells for, like, taking care of their gardens and stuff. And one of Audrey and mine, one of her best friends, and a good friend of mine, she's one of these, she loves working in the garden, right? And we're talking, if there's a spot, there's a special flower, and, I mean, it's something out of, you know, gardens gorgeous or something. And her water bill in the summer, because they made her turn off her well, it's like $600 to and she pays it because she wants the thing to look like that. And I'm going, why do you have to? How's that part of the deal to turn off the well that you own just so you could pay these guys? I mean, you can't write fiction like this, can you?
Well, that's when you have a monopoly, you do what you can to make it a true monopoly, which means you can't, you know, furnish water that's in your water table under your house without breaking the law. So that means you have to purchase it from the entity that's going to sell it to you. They don't make any money on your well water, so.
Well, yeah, it's just, I mean, I guess we're skipping around here, but you know, but to deal with this, you know, what Carl's been talking about for 5 years, which all of us kind of understand, especially if you pay any insurance for people like PTI does, it's totally out of hand. It's something we can't afford. You can't be paying $50,000 for chemo here when it's $2,000 in India, when it's the same stuff. And we have people bitching about Obamacare but no solution. There might be some, and it doesn't seem to ever go anywhere month after month after month. And you look at the Treasury numbers and they get worse and worse and worse. Where do we got to go to hit bottom? I mean, the city, I guess, could declare bankruptcy, or just go broke. But at some point, these guys are going to, especially with this pouring of money into the system, they're going to go out for one of these 10-year things, and they're going to come back and it's going to be up a point in one day. All of a sudden, the market's going to come flying down. Everybody's going to be all pissed off. And, Jen, the progression is right there. I mean, it's not like, you know, that we're $100 billion a hole one month, and the next month we're 99 or 98. Every month it seems to go up. And Trump rails on the Biden presidency. Well, the fact that he said that Biden broke the country. Well, you know, I'm looking at the last 4 years of the Obama administration. He put $2.19 trillion on the federal debt. Trump's first term, he put 5.56, so he doubled Obama, even though he claims Obama spent too much. And Biden went 7.15. Of course, there's more money in the system, so the numbers don't exactly match up. But still, I'm going to say Trump's on a you know, a deal now to go way more than the 7.15. So it doesn't seem to matter who's there, except for the fact the numbers get bigger and bigger and bigger. And now the single biggest thing, well, I guess Medicare is still bigger, on the debt list is the interest on the national debt. Well, if that continues, I mean, where the hell is bottom? I mean, we got to be getting pretty close. When is anybody...
Well, the problem for Chicago, Tom, is that there is no mechanism for the city to declare bankruptcy, which means there really is no bottom.
Well, I mean, okay,
I mean, other than the whole
I know, but
system
when you
is not working and there's no services provided.
Okay, but, all right, you got to split that one up.
It'll be like Blade Runner.
Well, people will say the city or the state can't declare bankruptcy, but that's a misnomer. It means you can't use the bankruptcy laws as protection, but you can go broke, which is most people think.
Oh, yeah,
what
yeah.
you meant by that.
But at least bankruptcy gives you an organized way of making priorities for who gets paid from whatever is left, and that there's someone supervising how this stuff gets liquidated and how you go forward. But without that mechanism, it's pretty sloppy.
But why? So, Detroit went through a bankruptcy process. Why can't Chicago?
They can't go bankrupt. They could go bankrupt.
A city can go bankrupt, a state cannot.
I know, but Chicago's a city last time I checked.
Yes.
But I'm saying what...
I think it's a quirk of Illinois law that its municipalities have no bankruptcy protection.
But bankruptcy is a federal act. How is that a state requirement?
Well, they can determine the eligibility for, you know, certain reliefs available to their city.
Right. So, I know I'm splitting hairs, Jan, but if all of a sudden
what I'm really saying is, and this is, you know, it's not a territory any city wants to be in or any state, but until you find bottom, and nobody, when that happens, is going to be willing to admit, yes, we've hit bottom. They're all going to think, well, we can weather this out, or there's another, you know, trick we haven't tried yet, and, you know, we can make this run out for another couple months or so. And this is the worst spot to be in if there's no way of just wrapping up and saying we've exhausted all options here.
Well,
I'm afraid that we're going to keep looking for bottom, and we're not going to find it.
I know I'm trying to be, you're the professor, not me, but I'm trying to be the professor and say what I don't want the message to go out to our listeners, to anybody, is any hint that because you can't declare bankruptcy doesn't mean you can't go broke.
No, absolutely not.
That's what it tends to mean to most people. But if all of a sudden 20,000 paychecks go out and they all bounce, you're broke.
But, you know, going broke will also mean that, you know, the pensions are gone and there's no income for, you know, the most vulnerable people, the most elderly, and no relief or anything else. So it's going to be, you know, warfare, you know, where people are slugging each other out for the next, you know, loaf of bread.
I'm with you. But, I mean, until that day comes, I mean, think of it, somebody, however you want to call it, I use the term, this will be the stocks and jacks reset. You need to redo these pension plans. You need to redo the parking meter plan. You need to redo Millennium Park. You need to yank the Skyway away from the idiots who have that. I mean, all these contracts are horrible. I mean, they were done for all the wrong reasons. I mean, the idea, I mean, California's the same way. I mean, not just blaming the average person who works for the jails in California works for, I don't know about the average person, after 20 years you can retire. Okay, I get a job when I'm 20, I retire when I'm 40. That's fine, as long as I get my first check when I'm 65. But if I get my check when I'm 40, name me any place that if that guy lives to be 100, guy or lady, that you could pay somebody for 80 years for 20 years work. Name me what mathematical plan you're under where that works. I mean, where? I can't think of one. Can you?
No.
I mean, if people want to retire from the police force at 55, knock yourself out. It's a tough job. But you either should be offered to go inside and become an evidence technician or do something, or else you get your first check when you're 65. I'm sorry. I got police plates on my car. I donate. My dad was a policeman. But the numbers don't hunt, do they?
No. I mean, even the efforts that have, you know, been undertaken in some of the pension funds to increase, you know, the number of years of participation in it, or the increase the age, the minimum age at which you can retire, is not enough. I mean, it's the right thing to do, but it should have been done a long time ago, and it should have been done more radically, you know, to make it 30 years to be vested instead of 20, or no retirement till you're 60 or 65. You know, that's the way, you know, Social Security is functioning. So I don't see any movement to do anything that radical with the state pensions. But if they don't do it, then, you know, nobody's going to end up getting paid.
Well, this is, I don't want to screw anybody, but if you're supposed, what do you get, 85% of your last year's wages, right?
80% in my...
Okay, 80%.
But the judicial pension, I think, is 85%.
Either one.
Last 3 years of earnings or whatever.
Okay, so let's subtract the Illinois football coach as a state employee. Let's excuse him. Let's say the governor is the highest paid person in the state other than the football coach, right? The governor makes whatever. Say he's making, you know, $250 a year. I have no idea what the governor makes it. Okay, 80% of that. Where are we? 200, right? Is my math right? Anybody who's making more than 200, you're back to 200. I don't care what you did. I mean, whether they put your sick leave on your last year or something. There's people making more than 200 in pension. Anybody who has two pensions, you're down to one. Take the biggest one. How do you get two pensions?
Four or five.
I'm not talking about ripping the heart out of people. I'm talking about what are we doing here? I mean, right?
Well, we're killing, you know, the whole concept of a pension was that, you know, it wasn't just something that you could pick, you know, and choose from, you know, four or five of them. You get the best deal. No, you get all four or five of them. If you were a legislator, if you had a county job, if you were the mayor, I mean, all these things are just added to it. It isn't like one subsumes the rest of them. And you just get one. No, this to me is ridiculous because effectively people never stop working.
Well, 20 years from the county, 20 years from the state, and you get two pensions, right?
Right, and you keep earning, you know, and you keep just below the amount of money that disqualifies you for the annuity. And all this does is jack up, you know, your last pension or whatever pension fund you're working under. So some people just never quit. And the idea was to get you off of the payroll and, you know, onto another system of, you know, an annuity and leave room for other people coming up through the ranks. But the whole thing is completely upside down.
Well, what are you kidding me? There are people that get double pensions from the city. There are guys that used to be with the police force that are now teachers or people there. This, and they get two pensions from the city. I'm not talking about county and state. I'm talking about the city itself.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Where that's
John was saying
that you could get people conceivably with five pensions.
Right.
How about this one, you guys? Illinois has somewhat of a bleeped up plan. That if you, my hometown was Evergreen Park, right? We're across the street from Chicago, so it's pretty close. If you are a teacher at Evergreen Park, you have a pension, okay? But Evergreen Park, Oak Lawn, Park Forest, they don't all have their own pension plan. They pile into the state somehow, right, John?
Right.
Now Chicago has its own pension plan, and so but the weird part is the people from Chicago pay into the state plan. In addition, so in other words, not only are you paying for the Chicago teacher's pension and salary, you're also paying a piece of the state persons. So you're paying both. And that is the city doesn't...
The city colleges, for example, are not part of the Chicago Teachers Union.
Right.
That's a state... They're in a state fund, and Chicago taxpayers, you know, are funding that too.
Right. So it's kind of a... You pay both. But the odd part is, they've actually come back to some of the villages and said, by the way, your superintendent was supposed to make $100,000 in his pension because you gave him 40 zillion sick days the last year. He's making 180. He should only be making 100. You got to eat the difference. And the villages are eating the difference, though, aren't they, John?
Forever.
Yeah, they're forever.
While the person's alive, they're paying that penalty, yeah.
I mean, it's... I don't want to say...
They're just happy to do it, though.
Yeah, they're happy.
To their tax levy.
But, it's, you know, it's this other people's money stuff, but it reaches a point where it's kind of not a joke. It's reaching a point where other people sort of just can't pay it. And actually, he's my mother's cousin. He's only like 2 years older than me, in Columbus, and he was the head of the union at the what do you call the guys? Jimmy might know the answer. They're not plumbers. The guys who run all the big like water power plants. Because there's all these pumping stations and stuff. The guys that work at the pumping plants, I guess they're sort of plumbers, but they're more like plumbing engineers, right? That's not exactly putting your toilet in or something.
Engineers, yes.
So he was the head of that union in Columbus, Ohio. The guy's name's Johnny. He's a terrific guy. And he goes, we knew when we worked here we didn't make as much money as anybody else, and it was an engineer, but we knew we had a pretty good pension. And I said, Johnny, he didn't retire until he was 65, and he was the head of the union. He never got paid in that job. So he goes, every time we went up, we never went on strike. We always figured what the city's, whether we had any money or not. We never did any of that kind of stuff. And I said, Johnny, you got to understand. I love you, bro, but I'm not saying you don't deserve a dime of that. What I'm saying is, 10 years from now, you can't even mention the word pension at a cocktail party because you're going to be the only person that has one. Nobody else has any idea what a pension even is, and they're just going to begrudge you your pension no matter how fair it might be, because he didn't retire until he was 65. Am I right on that? I mean, the rest of the world, name a company that has a pension now other than a 401k. I don't know anybody.
No. It's only the public sector, really.
Yeah.
And it's for in areas where unions really. I'd be so bold as to say they're unnecessary. If you have a monopoly, what do you need a union for?
Well, in Chicago.
Other than it's a ticket to just keep an ever hungrier group of constituents looking for public money to starve other ways of spending that. So that's why you get the school system that you do, because there's no quality control or anything. It's just all about funding more money to it, but nobody is watching the store. So
well, you could make a case, John, if you went back on Chicago history. These big firms, you can make a case where the unions weren't strong enough. When these companies were able to buy out a company, steal a pension fund, all of a sudden a union was left with nothing. Steel workers were like that. True. A lot of places were like that. And I don't know, that was purely a governmental
private
stuff.
Sector.
But anyway, let's get back to how does stuff, you could make the case, one of our good friends, he claims that this whole thing with the alderman and the mayor, this could be the bottom, this could be the turning point. Where we're actually turning a little more pro-business and telling the mayor to kind of stuff it. Is that possible? I mean, and what has to happen for other places to do the same thing?
Well, I think the only bright spot in this is if the mayor doesn't, try to veto this budget, the alternative budget from the
You think he
council.
Will?
If he's smart, he won't. But I don't think he's smart. I think he gets terrible advice. He's got a group of advisors who are living in some other dimension. If I think they also know too, though, that if the city does shut down, which is probably what will happen, if the city council just decides they're not going to do business with this guy, and they don't come up with anything else, he's going to be left holding the bag and be blamed for the consequences. And that's something that with the approval rating he's got now, he can't afford. I mean, even if you're a diehard Johnson fan, I don't see a shutdown helping him. And, I think his chances for re-election are probably dead anyway, but I don't know if he's gotten that message yet. So if it were, the result were a city council that were, more involved in this kind of stuff and saw how dire the situation has become, where something like the head tax is going to kill off the possibility of bringing more people back downtown, let alone other businesses opening up here. If somebody doesn't get that message, then the city really is sunk. So this is kind of, this is the Waterloo moment. So,
what has to happen on the federal side regarding this hospital? I keep saying hospital stuff, meds and everything else. It's breaking the government. It's breaking the country.
Well, the first thing is not to renew the subsidies for Obamacare, because that's just money to the insurance companies that keep this whole disaster.
Well, okay, but I mean, I know what side you're on.
A good thing.
I know what side you're on, and I don't agree with it. But on one side of the coin, you have the Democrats just keep paying the money out we don't have, which is kind of idiotic, and the Republicans are just don't give anybody any care and let them die. We don't know who the hell they are anyway, and most of them aren't white. Okay, well, that's not my plan either. So what's the solution if neither one of those are the solution? How do you get somebody to charge what is fair and by the way, to somehow take care of people? And right now, Nancy's going to tell a story about a friend of hers when she comes in, and the medical care, how she was, I'll let her tell a story. Had to do about, don't worry about it. It's more serious than we thought. Oh, boy, we got to do all this surgery and all this stuff, and who knows, you might not make it, type of thing. I mean, there's so much of that going on, Jen, and pick a drug, for God's sake. Look at these commercials. The thing that I try and, you know, the only thing I can add really to Stocks and Jocks is to try and piece all this together. That's kind of what I'm good at. I mean, when you see all these drug commercials through the entire football game, what do you think is paying for these salaries and stuff? I mean, these drugs are all on patent, right? They're all priced, God knows, way more than they could possibly be cost to make the damn things. They claim it's all being done for new research while they spend millions of dollars a game on TV. I mean, when are we going to say bullshit to all this shit? I mean,
RFK Jr. had floated the idea of banning, media advertising for pharmaceuticals, which, we're one of the, two countries left in the world that allow it. So
why can't we ever get to the Chief's small South Side brain stuff? Buddy, you can't charge $10 for a pill for 20 years that costs you 50 cents to make. Somehow or another, no matter the Republican plan, the Democratic plan, whatever line of crap somebody's giving you, therein lies the problem. If we don't address that, if it was a dollar a pill, John, Obamacare would be fine. Trump care would be fine. Everybody care would be fine. As long as it's $10, I don't care what you do with it. It's like silly putty. You squeeze it in one and it pops out the other. Why is it the only, I think you guys, why can't the only people who agree with that are on this show?
Well, the problem, too, is with the way the patent laws have protected these individual drugs and the drug companies that have all sorts of incentives to add one little, ingredient to some formula that's at the very basic level is nothing more than a supplement. It's something you make out of plant life or anything else, and all of a sudden turn it into a patented drug and drive everybody else out of the industry of making that particular drug because you patented the one combination that's now recognized as that drug for prescription purposes. Well, that would be a start, but that means
how does that legislation? Okay, take that by the way, I'm not supposed to agree with you ever. I agree with you, that's probably where you need to start. What is the time frame on that?
Well, it would be, making a period of unwinding patents after a certain date, that will dissolve after, by a certain date, and they're not able to be renewed. And that would, in an ideal world, that would stimulate competition to make up other versions, generic versions, low-priced versions of this same concoction, and get away from the idea that there can only be one version of it that is recognized for prescription purposes. But that's a 10, 15-year proposal at the very earliest.
What if the simplest, and I could poke a million holes in it, and so could you and Jimmy, but let's say I want to take the dumbest South Side solution that can be and say, hey, why? Look, let's take the patents from 17 years, and by the way, didn't Viagra and Cialis manage to weasel another 2 years somehow? So they actually got 19. Let's take it from
The same thing with the copyright laws and everything else, Tom. Look at Disney and the media companies that have just, run that. Mickey Mouse is going to outlive the next five generations of the way we're going. So.
Well, I'm just saying, if we wanted to do the dumbest, simplest solution, which wouldn't be a solution, let's take the 17/19 years down to 12, which I don't think would be much of a solution, but it would be some. That's just the simplest solution. Given the political landscape now, does that happen in our grandkids' lifetime?
No.
With luck.
I mean, then that would be the
not
simplest
not a sure thing.
thing. That, we're not redefining anything. We're just saying 17 is too long in the modern world. We're going to make it 12 or 11 or 13 or something. I don't think that crap happens. I mean, how can a total rethink of the law and make it sane happen?
Well, it's going to be harder to turn this bus around because it's, you know, it's evolved in a way that just gives greater and longer protections, and therefore it has, you know, to make it now, we're not going to go that route anymore. In fact, we're going in the opposite direction. That's going to be a hard one to sell, I think.
All right,
but it has to happen, but it's not going to go down easily.
Well, I'm just going to lob this one out here, you guys. Where am I here? I'm going to find my favorite page. Where the hell is it? U.S. National Debt Clock. We'll pop this one up here. And we have the interest on debt. The defense is now $932 billion a year. Interest on debt, $967. All right. Medicare is higher. Social Security is higher. But people pay into that. All right. So now if interest on debt gets to be, let's say, $3 trillion a month, are we still having this conversation or does somebody wake up? Where does it have to go? I mean, I know you guys don't know the end, but really, we're in kind of a...
We're long past the point at which the alarm bell should have been going off.
Yeah, but where does it go to where somebody's going to go out and the interest on the 10-year is not going to be 4.16. By the way, it's up 10 basis points today. It's going to be 7.16 or 9.16 or something like we saw when we were younger. Then what? Then where this number is now going to be... $3 trillion. I mean, for God's sake. I mean, I don't want to see what has to happen for this to, for everybody to wake up. But someplace, Trump and Trump's supporters. Sorry, Jen. If you guys don't realize that in the next year there's going to be yet another tax increase in addition to the incredible tariff tax increase, you guys are smoking the good weed. There's no way this and the tariff stuff is going to fall way short of what he thought it was going to be. He thought it would be $650 billion. Even if he gets away with the tariffs, I'm guessing half of that, which doesn't come anywhere near to the savings and the taxes on the last bill. I'm not saying I want any taxes to go up, but someplace, somewhere, there's a problem here, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. And even if the tariffs were to result in the payments, to the average taxpayer, I don't see that as having any different result from what happened during COVID.
No,
it's just going to stoke inflation.
You know what the debt per taxpayer country in the U.S. national debt is? Well, there's two numbers here: debt per citizen and debt per taxpayer. Now, these numbers are wrong, but when I say wrong, you know what they are?
It's like 140,000 or something.
111 debt per citizen, 329 debt per taxpayer. But now that takes the really dumb idea that if you don't pay federal income taxes, you don't pay taxes. When in fact, you pay a lot of taxes if you don't pay federal income taxes, right?
Well, you're paying somewhere or another.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Here's where the federal tax revenue is $5.2 trillion. The payroll is 1.7, income tax is 2.7, and excise is 222. So payroll tax is two-thirds to three-quarters of the income tax. So no matter who you are, you're paying payroll, right? State, now get a little of this. State revenue is $2.7 trillion and cities $2.1. So out of the whole tax mess here, then you're paying tariff tax, too, on top of that. You're just paying state excise taxes. I mean, God, look at the list of this shit. Excise tax, $222 million, and estate tax is $31 billion, not million. Then they got future tax tariff, they got $681. I'd say that number is more like three. So out of the total here is state tax is 2.7, 2.1, so we're 4.7. Income tax is 2.7, so that's 7.4. Payroll is 1.8, so we're 9.2. Excise another two, so we're 9.7. Let's say we're $10 trillion in taxes, roughly, total, and income tax is 25% of that. So the stated somebody who doesn't pay income taxes doesn't pay taxes is a little misleading, wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
So what have we solved here before we get to Nancy? Anything?
Well, it's every journey starts with a small step, Tom, but the small steps look really big when you factor in all the lobbyists and people are used to business as usual. So you better start pretty soon with the smallest step. Which, you know, I actually start with patents. I mean, I think that's something that it's got to be done right, but it's got to be done fast, too. Or you're never going to get rid of this problem. You know, the way that the pharmaceuticals have become an essential for, you know, human life, which is, I think, the wrong way to look at the whole issue. But that's what the insurance companies benefit from. That's from what the doctors benefit from. And the manufacturers of these drugs have to be chastised in a way that they're not going to like. There's not endless profits to be made over, you know, for these kinds of things, and not for, you know, endless periods of time, too. So unless we can change that thinking, I don't think we change.
Well, just if you walk into a, not that you or Jimmy would ever do this, you walk into a local saloon or a guy like me into a coffee shop or a library, and you start interviewing people and say, what would you say about getting rid of the patent laws? I'm going to say most people have this amazingly nostalgic view. Wait a minute. You're telling me that if I go out in the garage and I invent something, all of a sudden everybody can copy it tomorrow? That's crazy. I want protection.
Yeah, but not in perpetuity.
You know, well, okay, not, but long? They'll say, you know, 12 years, 10, whatever it is. But the point is, I think that those laws over a period of time have worked absolutely against the individual. But how do you explain that to people? That you all of a sudden, that somebody can steal your stuff? It would know. I mean, they don't know that if somebody does steal your stuff, you have to go after them. The government doesn't help you.
Right.
That when you drop off an invention at the patent office, I think other people steal it. They don't know that.
I think, you know, a parallel thing. I mean, to go back to Disney for just a minute, I think it's the reason why that company is in such a mess now, is because they've been able to hang on to their copyright to the exclusion of any kind of, you know, possibility that somebody's going to come up with something better or taking a twist on it that Disney doesn't make money on. So they freeze out all the competition and just keep churning out the same garbage. And now that they're doing it in ways that show how politicized the whole thing has become, but they still hang on to the property rights for these, you know,
behemoths. Well, but I mean, why, in terms of copyright,
it's bad for creativity, it's bad for, you know, the people's entertainment possibilities or choices. It's bad all the way around. The average person thinks, gee, if I write a book or if I invent something, I should get the benefit of that. But, you know, it's been so distorted and corrupted now, where the more power you have, the longer you can keep these things, and you're given, you know, rights to hang on to things longer than the average citizen does. And I don't think the average citizen understands that part of it at all.
Well, I mean, we'll have to discuss this with Nancy in a second. Plus, we got to do traffic, weather, and sports, so we didn't do it. But I don't get the connection between, like, a pill you're charging for. I mean, Stocks and Jocks is a trademark. As long as the group of us decides to do it and are alive to do it, why should anybody else get to use Stocks and Jocks?
Oh yeah, as a business, you could, you know, keep running. If you've got some, you know, software that you want to patent and you can license it and, you know, sell it to other people or get royalties from it, you know, that will have maybe a limitation on it, but you're right to keep the business open and to keep that name, and, you know, as long as you pay your taxes and, you know, conform to the, you know, corporation laws, you know, you should be able to do that for a long time. But that doesn't mean that all the baggage that goes along with it.
Oh yeah, I'm with you on that. But I mean, in terms of a copyright, why should anybody else ever get to print my book?
But if you live long enough, it should happen, Tom.
Well, I mean,
it's 75 years.
I guess if it's George Washington's book, maybe it'd be different. I guess everybody gets to print the Bible, right? I mean,
Shakespeare too, you know, all this stuff.
Anyway, we're gonna have Nancy in a minute. Hey, Matt, did you send Nancy the Zoom link?
Working on it right now.
Okay, and let's do a traffic, weather, sports, and we'll come back. You're gonna hang on, aren't you, Jen?
I can't hang out today. I got out of town in a little bit. So
all right. Well, good luck with that.
I'll be listening as I'm getting ready. So.
All right. Well, Jimmy will hang with. SP Futures up 31. NASDAQ Futures up 173. John, Merry Christmas. If we don't talk to you, we're gonna might have you on later because we're gonna
and Matt and Jim too.
You too, John.
Yeah, we gotta squeeze around our Thursday guests. We've got to get them on somewhere this week. So we might have you back. And plus, I'm not sure if everybody's gonna be here. Anyway, we'll be right back. Stocks and Jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net. Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Back to programming in a minute, but first, listen to this. Seems the New York Mint is releasing to the public classic U.S. gold coins. There's a number you can call for free historical information and a free DVD. But first, it says that during the Great Depression, people were greedy for gold coins because no one wanted to face economic turbulence without the security of gold. The government finally took them out of circulation, and a government meltdown was ordered. That's why most of us have never even seen a classic U.S. gold coin. But recently, a stash was discovered in Europe. Gleaming U.S. gold coins minted between 1866 and 1933, all uncirculated. It says the New York Mint is releasing them to the public on a first-come, first-served basis when you call, here it is, 1-800-906-3949. Wouldn't that be amazing to hold U.S. history? Okay, if you want that free historical information and the free collector's DVD, the number to call is 1-800-906-3949. 1-800-906-3949.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Louis, I think this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
Rocking around the Christmas tree at the Christmas party hop. Mistletoe hung where you can see, every couple tries to stop. Rocking around the Christmas.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell, Matt Byrne on the board, Jim Lawler in studio. I think we have Nancy. All right, Jimmy, I know you played the Eagles earlier, and I know that's this song I've heard forever. I'm going to brain fart here. Who's that? Who's this singing? Is this a... Who is this?
This is Brenda Lee.
That's okay. I have songs I forgot who did them, and I got the album, for God's sake. You know, this is bad.
She's been around for a while.
Oh, God, yeah.
Like, some of her solo stuff is really, you know, really hard garage rock stuff. It's fun.
Garage rock. Oh, what is that?
Never heard of garage rock?
No.
Man, I'm think of, like, the Trogs, You know, even earlier stuff like, you know, Dirty Water by the what is it, the Standells?
Okay.
Standells, yeah.
Yeah, stuff like that. Sounds like it was recorded in a garage, kind of that grimy, you know, yeah.
Garage band.
Yeah.
Nancy, do you know what a garage band is?
We're still waiting on Nancy. Oh.
All right, well, she'll pile in.
She'll be here soon.
She's,
There she is now.
Nance, how are you?
Why? This is wild.
Yeah, do you know what a garage band is?
Garage band?
Yeah, your volume's a little low. We'll get you up here. We're talking about garage bands, and what was the first term you used, Matt?
Garage rock.
Garage rock.
No, I've never heard of it.
You and I must be aged or something.
A lot of 60s stuff. 60s, you know.
All right. Well, I know all that stuff. Matter of fact, what was last week, wasn't it the 55th anniversary of American Pie or something? My God.
Was it really?
Yeah, something like it's bad, Dad. It's bad. I was at my.
That is bad, guys. Very bad. We're really getting old.
Yeah. Well, your friend Audrey and I, last night we were at my cousin's 91st birthday.
Okay.
And he was.
And how long ago was this? A couple years ago?
No, last night.
Okay.
And so he went to Tilden Tech, and he ran halfback, and he was a halfback and ran track for the University of Colorado. And he graduated in 1957. And has agreed, he's still mentally right there, to come on the show someday and talk about recruiting in those days and how what it was like and what you got and what the little spoofs you got and those kinds of things and compare it to today's world. I thought that'd be pretty interesting.
Yeah, it would be.
I said, did you even get a campus visit? He goes, yeah. I said, well, how'd you get out there? You got to take the train. So it took me 2 days to get there, yeah. And, you know, and then they gave me a scholarship, and he also was in Air Force ROTC. Then he had to spend time in the Air Force, and so when he came out, he tried to play pro ball, and he's not a real big guy, but he's real fast, and he goes, I knew I had lost a step. I went from, like, 9,700 to, like, a 9,900. He goes, you wouldn't think that'd be much. He goes, but the big dude that I used to just get around, I just couldn't get around, the guy's slamming me. Made all the difference in the world at one step, and you know, it's and he was mentioning yesterday. He says, you know, all these people. He goes, all these parents think these kids are going to be pros. You know, and he's a real bright guy. He goes, you know how many kids play tackle for their high school football teams statewide? He goes, there's got to be hundreds of them. And he goes, and how many of those guys go to college? Maybe. You know, 10%. In college, there's like hundreds there. And out of all those guys, the people that make the pros, there's like 6 a year, 10 a year. He goes, people have no idea. He goes, if you want to go anywhere, you better be all-state in high school. And you better be all-American in college. He goes, which I wasn't. And even then, you're lucky to make a pro team, much less being a star. He goes, why doesn't anybody get this math? I go, I don't know, but they sure don't, do they? Everybody's kid's going to be a pro, right?
I guess so. It's the way it's been going.
Yeah, it's those guys are at the top of the gene pool. I know that. So what's going on in your world? What's going on with we were talking about some of the medical stuff that's going on in the kind of weirdo care lately. And I know you had a couple of stories about that if you want to share, you can. But it seems like people can't get in to see people. The when they get there, a disease they maybe could have cured, now they can't. I mean, it is stunning the lack of care like we used to know it, where if you're sick, you got to see a guy tomorrow or next week or something. And yet the expenses keep going up, 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 and the death rates keep going up, up, up. And what are we doing here, Nance?
You know what? It's become a business now. I mean, when it's a lot different though when you someone... You know, a doctor graduated, went out on his own. He had to hang a shingle out in front and just wait for people to come, right? And then you had to hope to God that the you know, he cured the people liked him, and And that they would tell their friends. And it's a lot different than what's happening today. They get out of school and then they get hired by a hospital and they get paid, you know, whether they see, you know, one patient a day or 10 patients a day or 30 patients a day. It's just a whole different, it's a whole different thing. So when you had to get patients to come in and actually have them spread the word that you were, you know, really good, blah, 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 that's a whole different ballgame. Plus, you don't have any income coming in and you've got expenses going out because you had an office and all of that. It's so different. And I know Northwestern, most of, like, on Fridays, the labs, all that closed down at like 3:30. I'm talking about like the blood labs, stuff like that. And they go home. And these people are going to have probably a better family life, you know, a better life balance. But I don't know what's going to happen as far as, like, illnesses just aren't. They just don't stop being after 4 o'clock on Fridays till Monday morning.
Well,
you know what I mean?
This is a harsh accusation, so I'll go easy with it. But if you had a family doctor or somebody, a guy that's your doctor or a lady, you're kind of the patient. It's sort of like me having a client. I sure as hell don't want the client to die, but we have some of those. And I sure as hell don't want him to go broke, and I don't want him to lose money, because they personally are my client. Or the way the stuff is now, the doctor is never really your doctor. I mean, I know some people have just been in Northwestern recently, and some didn't make it too well out. Like the guy who does the surgery on you, if he's the Zamboni driver, and he takes out a piece of lung or prostate or whatever he is, he's the procedure. You're not going to get his phone number. He doesn't look at you like his patient. He's the guy whose surgery did at 10 o'clock on a Friday morning. I mean, you can walk out of there without anybody being really your doctor. And I'm not going to say they want you to die. I'm saying it's not the same as the guy who's taken care of you for 25 years. It just can't be.
And this has been coming for a while. Like, yeah. if you it used to be that, if I, you know, let's say I went in the hospital, you saw your GP or internist came to see you, right? And then they said, no, we're going to get hospitalists. And the reason behind that is that way the hospitalists, there's no emotional attachment to you. There's no anything. And they just get you in and they get you out. And that's the theory behind what they're doing. They're making it so that, you know, it's cookie cutter. I mean, they go through your chart. They have someone that goes through your chart at the end of the night, and they put down all the possibility of the things that you, you know, could need or what could be wrong. And then they tell you to come back in. But the hospitalist is there to not have any emotional attachment. Just look at this from a viewpoint of, you know, the insurance company pays three days in hospital care for the disease you have. And if your illness didn't read the book, and let's say it takes 4 or 5, or you know, let's say you don't have anyone at home to take care of you or whatever, their job is to get you out within that 3-day period that the insurance company pays, period. That's it.
So Nance, you're in the mortgage business. I'm in the money management / brokerage business. If we sit our next client down and say, by the way, I have no emotional attachment to you whatsoever, how are we doing on client attraction? Just curious.
Well, it doesn't work well, right? And that's why people are complaining. People are looking at this and they're saying, at first it didn't, this has been coming on for a long time. I mean, my husband's been gone, oh my God, probably 8 or 9 years now. And this had started he had a stay at Northwestern downtown, and it was going on there. So I said to his regular doctor, can't you come and see him in the hospital? And she said, well, it causes trouble. And she said, but I'm coming. And I said, what is the deal? And she said, well, I don't get paid to come and see him. Right. And that's how they first started to control it.
Well, she gets every test and everything faster than you do, but she should, at least.
Right, but she could not come in and see him while he was in the hospital, but she did come. And then one of the times she came, she disagreed with the hospitalist. And you can see where the, you know, the trouble starts.
Oh, yeah.
And so I thought, oh, my God, I would never try and get into, you know, I would get treated at Northwestern, but try not to get, have to be in the hospital down there.
Well, when nobody has the name on whether you live or die when you walk out, that's very dangerous. Because you're just, all you're doing is paying for procedures. You're not paying for outcome.
Well, that is correct. So,
what's the outcome? I want to live for a while. Well, we don't care about that. As long as we did these five surgeries, we made money. See ya.
Well, and it's not quite that cold, but it can get that cold, and that's where the problem is. We never had this before. People cared, and it made a difference. The person made a difference, and it's not really like that anymore. It's just.
Well, hey, I was thinking about you the other day. I was listening to, actually driving to Orland in the horrible traffic the other day, and there was somebody, we just went through last week, Nance, I don't know if you're paying attention, but we talked about, I think it was Carl, and we had a couple people on, and we were talking about the CPI that came out that was a total joke, that the page is blank for damn near, and I don't know what, how people are going to put up with this, Let's just say it's a historically very whatever. When governments stop giving you the numbers, it's a bad sign. I'll just say that without saying anything worse. So there was a big survey this weekend. I don't know who did it, but News Radio 78, I'll give them credit, was talking about interviewing all these people and whether they're happy with the first year of the Trump economic plan. And virtually no one is. I mean, there's the base blames whatever's going on in Biden, but they're not happy about it. And the two things that they're not happy about is inflation, and the inflation, even though you can jump up and down and say the price of eggs and gas is down, which it is, the big problems are home ownership and health care, which is, last week we were talking about the CPI, and the two biggest holes, the two biggest fixes are that for the last 20 some years is that the CPI says your hospital or medical expenses is 6.5% of your basket when it's 21% of the economy. So obviously there's a big screw up there, and the idea of owner's equivalent rent doesn't count really much of insurance, doesn't count any taxes, and oh, by the way, it doesn't really count the prices of the houses have gone way up. So all the stuff you deal with, it sort of doesn't count, but individual people say those are the two big problems. If you look at the CPI with any kind of a educated look, you say those are the two big problems. So where does that put you trying to put somebody in a house? And the week before you weren't on, they said to the average person now, in order to buy the median home, I think it was $125,000 or $135,000 in income, the median home. And they said, well, now, what percentage of population makes that? It's like 10. So where does that put you trying to put people in houses?
It's difficult. It's just difficult. Very difficult. I mean, and more people are walking away from this business.
Well, what do you do in an area where you thought some people were set up for a house? I mean, we're my buddy, well, John Lee, he's been out a few times. He probably come back when he was back from Europe. He owns a house up in Edgebrook or someplace. I think he said the taxes went from $9,000 to $16,000, or was it $16,000 to $20,000, something like that. It was a $7,000 pickup. Well, now if you're in the middle of a mortgage application and you see that, well, that's another $800 a month or $600 a month. Now, what do you do with that if the person's just barely making it in the first place? You turn them down?
Yeah, you do. I mean, that's a given up front. I mean, those numbers are looked at right in the beginning. They're looked at right in the beginning. So yeah, they get turned. They would get turned. They would be told that.
Have you ever had a change a yes to a no in the middle of the process because the new bill came out?
No, because no, we have not. No, we have not. You don't see prices increases like that. Plus, you look at the bills around where they're at already.
Well, this is a shocker on the north side. This just happened. Now, you know, you're aware of this. I mean, so, well, if let's just say John had sold his place to Jim Lawler across on the other mic over there, and all of a sudden, in the middle of the mechanism, where they talk about last year's taxes, and you know, John has to pay for the, and he gets this new bill. Does he have to say, "Hey guys, it's no longer 9; it's 16"? Or can he keep that under wraps?
No, he can't. Everything gets reviewed the day before closing. I mean, nothing ever gets through like that. Especially, and then there's so many checks and balances on those taxes. They're looked at. They're looked at like all the time. That it could stop a deal. Let's put it that way. It could stop the deal.
So when he gets the bill, it's already in the record somewhere. So if you were to look it up, you'll see that it's gone up, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the title company would get notified. The title company would see it. It would be very hard to believe that could happen. Honest to God, because the tax bill has to be paid in the day of the closing, and it has to be prorated and put into the, because they run a year behind. So it would be, and at let's just say it happened the day after closing, okay? The people take, at closing, the title companies were asking this last time, you know, where the bills didn't come out, they were asking for one in a half and one or one and three quarters times what the bill would be, so there'd be enough money in escrow.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. So,
yeah,
yes,
that's very common.
They ask for that money up front. They have it set aside. Now, whether or not the person can still qualify, that's a whole nother problem.
Well, if the title company says they want that, do you, and Jimmy's licensed as well, do you guys get to say, wait a minute, I think the taxes are going to be up that much next year and you can't afford it? I hope you never have a deal car like that, but it could happen, eh?
It could happen. It could. I mean, it would be very unfortunate, but it could.
How about insurance? I mean, insurance is up way up too, isn't it?
You have to pay 1 year up front.
Yeah.
So they kind of have that more dialed in.
I have insurance going up since 2000, up three times. And I think the CPI is up, what, it's up double or something? Maybe a little over double since 2020. So how do you, what do you guys, what's your insurance guess going forward? I mean, you really don't want this person to foreclose.
Homeowners insurance is a little bit of a tricky, and Nancy will tell you. The mortgage company only requires you to cover the amount of the mortgage. Anything above and beyond that is really on you. So it's, you know, you can theoretically just cover the mortgage and still be underinsured. Because the mortgage company only cares about that that you have enough insurance to cover the mortgage. That's it. Your jewelry, anything above and beyond that, that's not their concern.
Okay. Well, so in other words, you could get a fire policy and not include any of yours, and they're okay with that.
It depends on if they want a fire policy or not. The other one is a flood. And Nancy knows that you'd have to have a flood policy. But they just basically want, the mortgage companies just want to make sure that they're covered. They're covered, not you.
Hey, well, speaking of which, Nancy, are you going out to get a rider on your homeowners? Now, silver is at $62.50 today. To cover your setting of 48 on your sterling silver?
Am I sterling? Are you talking about your china and stuff?
Well, no, Russell was silverware, telling it, yeah. Silverware. The silver's up to this incredible price. It was $25 like a year ago. Now it's $62 for silver.
No, they don't. They don't really cover. I mean, you can only get paid out if you. Right? You can only get paid out if you, in fact, have a list that you're paying for to them.
Right. You got to identify them, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to identify it. So I don't think that would really happen. Honestly, I don't.
Well, I'll be listening on Wednesday. Russell said he grabbed his stuff from his parents, and he thought it was sterling and took it to the guy. The guy goes, "This is plate. It's worthless." Because my parents got me one more time. I thought it said sterling on there, but it wasn't.
No, sterling has a mark.
Really? So, Jimmy, you seem to know something about this, but one of these days, I mean, if silver gets to $200 an ounce, I mean, a lot of people will be taking their silverware somewhere to get melted down, probably.
The reason is when my parents downsided, they had a lot of silver platters, stuff like that, silverware that was given to them for this, and my mom didn't want it anymore. I got some of it. So I've looked into it. There are stuff that is silver plated that is not worth anything. But sterling silver has a mark on it. You can look it up on AI and it'll tell you the mark and who, the mark tells you who it is, who made it.
Really? So if it tarnishes, it's probably silver, right?
Yeah. I mean, tarnish or not, if you melt it down, I mean, that's what they're looking for. Silver is silver. I don't think pure silver tarnishes. I think sterling is only 90% silver.
All right. I don't know anything about this, but...
Let me ask you this. Where could you take something to actually find out if it has any worth?
Oh, God. They're advertising all over the place. Gold and silver. These places are up this much.
Pawn shops.
You know, there's a place in Orland. It does. It's a goldsmith, and they do silver. Bring your jewelry in here. We'll tell you how much it's worth.
I just can't imagine that being honest, but go okay.
You could yank out a couple of those, gold crowns and go get a new crown and bring the gold in, trade it in. I don't think anybody'd do that, but
I don't think they use gold anymore. They haven't in years.
Hey, I got one.
My father had a lot. He used to have a lot, and they now, when they replace it, they don't put gold back in.
I hope they gave him the gold back.
I don't know. I mean, it was 24 karat gold. Yeah. I mean, it's hypoallergenic and very malleable, and that's why dentists were using that in silver.
You know, the biggest reason why they use gold, Nance, you should know this. You know all this stuff.
No, I don't. This is news to me.
If gold gets hot or cold, it expands or contracts almost the exact same amount as your normal tooth.
I did not know that.
So if you drink something really hot, the gold doesn't like expand and pop off your tooth.
I have no idea.
Last thing you want to do is swallow it. Anyway, so is the business? We're looking at a 4.16. The long term rates are actually up a little bit since the three drops in the short-term rates. It looks like we might have another drop next month as they're lobbying Powell to do. 10-year's not going down, though, is it, Nance? What about mortgage rates? Are they going down at all?
No, they're based on the 10-year bonds. So, no, they're not. You just said it yourself.
So
no.
where are you?
It just depends on the... It just depends on, a lot of stuff, but we're in the sixes, and we're in the solid sixes. So, people keep expecting rates to come down. I even think Audrey told me she thinks the rates will be down in like March or April, and then we'll sell more. There'll be more homes on the market. I really believe the biggest problem now is people are starting to get the idea the rate isn't going to go down. It's the inventory isn't there. People just are not going to give up the rate. If you're at 2 3/8%, why would you move?
Are you still getting some where people's credit card is so big that they're having to redo the house to get the credit card number down?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Boy, that's scary.
All of it is scary if you really analyze it, but...
If you had a guess, and I'm not asking you to get a dash here in a second. If you had to guess without casting aspersions on your clients, the credit cards that get too high up there, I'll give you three choices. One is somebody got laid off, thought they were going to get a job pretty quick, and decided to keep their lifestyle somewhat in the meantime. Or there was a medical expense or a transmission they needed or something like that. Or they just plain went out and bought a bunch of crap they didn't, and just didn't care.
Most of the people, if you ask them, what did you spend the money on, they will tell you they honestly, truthfully don't know.
That's scary.
The majority, and the difference in people is the people that have the higher credit cards and they know it, they call and say, I have these high credit cards. I know this isn't the smartest thing to do. I know I have a lower rate, but the idea for me would be to, I think it's time to get it off, the credit cards off, and see what I can do to consolidate some of this and make it easier upon myself so I don't have to charge any, pay these credit cards. Because when you make the payment on the credit card, all you're doing is recharging it. You're living off your credit cards. That's what happens. Those people tell you that up front. The ones that have just large credit cards, they just, it's just like, the sun comes up every morning.
Well, for a long time, the statistics were, and a lot of people who declared bankruptcy did it because they had a health event or something along those lines they didn't expect. Now you're saying it's kind of not the way anymore? It's just people just spending too much?
It's just, they're just using their credit cards as a way to, I don't even want to say a way to live. People just don't have, I had someone this week who, just had $8,000 on a credit card. And that in itself is not a lot or unusual or anything, but they don't have any income. So I said, how did you think you're going to pay off this credit? I mean, when you were charging, what was your plan to pay this off? And they say that, they'll get it paid off. And I said, but you don't have any income. So how are you going to get it paid off? And they just keep repeating, I'm going to pay it off at $100 a month. The minimum payment is $120 a month.
It's not very much.
Okay. Then I'll pay the $120 a month.
It'll take 23 years to pay off.
Right. And when you're talking with them, and they have no conception that this is an unrealistic thought, there's no sense in continuing talking about how to get them in the house because there's no reality. Does that make sense? I mean, I'm trying to...
It is, but
I'm trying to say it's like if you make a mistake. I tell people, look, if you make a mistake, you got to own the mistake. You can't continue I can't continue working with you if you don't understand that you made the mistake. I mean, if you say, I made a mistake, I own the mistake, I had poor judgment, I get it now, I can work with that. But if you just keep saying I can pay it off when the reality is you're never going to pay it off, like you're saying 23 years, you're never going to pay it off.
Well, this changes all the time. It comes down to a strength in the economy. But last question, then we got to dash. If say, the boat users, they say in the South Side, you got 2-3 kids, you got a nice house in the suburbs, you got a couple of cars, somebody has a nice job, let's say one person's working. Somebody has a nice job, everybody's taken care of. Tomorrow the person gets bleep canned. All right, so they're fired. They get 3 months severance or whatever the hell the number is. Well, I don't think most people, you're going to say, I'll be able to get another job. By the way, I'm pretty marketable. I always show up, good references. My company just went under. It was not my fault. You got 3 months. I don't think you're going to pull the kids out of the school tomorrow. You're not going to auction off your cars, call Carvana on Wednesday. There's some time period at which you're going to try and make things as normal as possible for everybody, figuring that you're, say, in 6 months you'll have a job. Maybe you can go on unemployment or something, but the fact is, most of the time that estimate's probably okay. So you're going to probably borrow a little bit. What happens if a year from now the economy falls apart and now you got, not only still don't have a job, you're off the unemployment, you're off your severance, and oh, by the way, your credit card's pushing 20. Now what? I mean, it wasn't like you sort of did it on purpose. You made what
then you could maybe sell your house. Usually you can look into take funds out of your 401k. I mean, there's a lot of things you can do with those people because they have common sense. They understand there's a temporary situation and I've got to find a way around it. Okay, like I know a man that just started delivering I don't know what they call them, but like it's not shipped where you...
They're pizzas.
Yeah, but they'll deliver food to people's houses and stuff like that, you know.
DoorDash.
That type of thing. And he said, I'm not going to do this forever, but there's no shame in it. I just need extra cash coming in. And I agree with that. I can work with people like that. I mean, there are things that can be done.
I had a client that worked in the post office. Great softball player. I think he retired. He's in Arizona someplace. Used to deliver pizzas, then he went to Chinese Chow. He said Chinese Chow was way better. The clientele was better. It was always hot when you got there. It was packaged better. Pizzas, everybody's drunk when you showed up. he thought Chinese food was better. Just saying.
Yeah, but I mean, there are other things that can be done.
Yeah.
And we find ways around it. But if you just have people sitting there saying, well, you know, it's all going to be all right. Well, do you have a plan? Are you thinking about anything? No. It's just all going to be all right. It's not realistic.
No. Well, today's interview for a job today is really, really tough. Nance, am I going to see you during the holidays?
I hope so.
Well, it's supposed to be nice weather. You can't even use ice as an excuse.
Oh, I mean, that's absolutely fine. I agree. What can I say?
All right. See you soon. Oh, SP Futures up 34. Nasdaq Futures up 191. We're off to the races. We got silver, SLV up $1.65. We got gold and silver to the moon. Oil's up a little bit, but still only like $57. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now. Right here. Right now.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit hamzyanalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.
Are you nuts?